"Oh, yes," answered the little ballet girls in chorus, warding off ill luck by pointing their forefinger and little finger at the absent Persian, while their second and third fingers were bent on the palm and held down by the thumb. "And you know how superstitious Gabriel is," continued Jean. "However, he is always polite. When he meets the Persian, he just puts his hand in his pocket and touches his keys. Well, the moment the Persian appeared in the doorway, Gabriel gave one jump from his chair to the lock of the cupboard so as to touch iron. In doing so, he tore a whole skirt of his overcoat on a nail. Hurrying to get out of the room, he banged his forehead against a hat peg and gave himself a huge bump. Then, suddenly stepping back, he skinned his arm on the screen near the piano. He tried to lean on the piano, but the lid fell on his hands and crushed his fingers. He rushed out of the office like a madman, slipped on the staircase, and came down the whole of the first flight on his back. I was just passing with Mother. We picked him up. He was covered with bruises, and his face was all over blood. We were frightened out of our lives, but all at once he began to thank Providence that he had gotten off so cheaply. Then he told us what had frightened him. He had seen the ghost behind the Persian, the ghost with the death's head, just like Joseph Bouquet's description." Jeanne had told her story ever so quickly, as though the ghost were at her heels, and was quite out of breath at the finish. A silence followed, while Sorelli polished her nails in great excitement. It was broken by little Giry, who said, "Joseph Bouquet would do better to hold his tongue." "Why should he hold his tongue?" asked somebody. "That's Mother's opinion," replied Meg, lowering her voice and looking all about her as though fearing lest other ears than those present might overhear. "And why is it your mother's opinion?" "Hush! Mother says the ghost doesn't like being talked about." "And why does your mother say so?"
Because nothing."
This reticence exasperated the curiosity of the young ladies, who crowded round little Giry, begging her to explain herself. They were there, side by side, leaning forward simultaneously in one movement of entreaty and fear, communicating their terror to one another, taking a keen pleasure in feeling their blood freeze in their veins.
"I swore not to tell," gasped Meg.
But they left her no peace and promised to keep the secret, until Meg, burning to say all she knew, began, with her eyes fixed on the door,
"Well, it's because of the private box."
"What private box?"
"The ghost's box."
"Has the ghost a box? Oh, do tell us, do tell us."
"Not so loud," said Meg. "It's box 5, you know, the box on the grand tier, next to the stage box on the left."
"Oh, nonsense."
"I tell you it is. Mother has charge of it."
"But you swear you won't say a word?"
"Of course, of course."
"Well, that's the ghost's box.
No one has had it for over a month except the ghost, and orders have been given at the box office that it must never be sold."
"And does the ghost really come there?"